Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I want to welcome you to The Sanchez Effect. We've decided on this day to take our show outside of the studio and take it to a very historic place because we're living in a very historic time right now. We are in the Embassy of Iran. I want to show you something. Look at these pictures. Look at these diplomats. You see that gentleman in that picture you're looking at right there? That's 560 years old, one of the first diplomats to go around talking to other countries about how they could solve their problems with the Persians. And over the years, they've continued to talk to leaders from around the world, as you can see in some of these images with the past leaders of the Soviet Union and Russia. So this is something that has continued for so long, and they have asked us to come and get their story. Now, I told you at the outset of this war, I said, in fact, it was only after the second day, I said, this thing will escalate. You know what? It's escalating. Watch.
We negotiate with bombs.
Human rights and international humanitarian law have been massively and systematically violated.
We affirm that our military operations only target the Israeli and American enemy to thwart the Zionist scheme. I have warned the Iranian terrorist regime to stop firing missiles at the civilian population in Israel. They will pay heavy, increasing prices for this war crime.
So why are we here? Well, last week, I think you'll recall that I went on the air and said that Mr. Trump had just announced that he was very close to a truce, that he was negotiating with the Iranians, and the Iranians were apparently willing to come up with some kind of solution to stop the war, and that it was them, the Iranians, that had called him. Well, that obviously had an effect on markets. It had an effect on the reporting of the war. The Iranians, though, having watched that report, immediately started calling us and others to say that's not true. They said, we have not been negotiating. As a matter of fact, we're not interested in negotiating. And they feel like their story is not being told because too often the West controls the narrative. So they called us and they called others and we said, okay, we're going to come and talk to you. We believe, we really do, it's our mission that both sides of a story should be told. Which is why we're here, at the Iranian embassy, to have a conversation with the Iranian ambassador. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us once again. We very much appreciate your time. Last time you and I spoke was several months ago, and at the time, things were perilous, but I sensed that you were very hopeful. How do you feel now?
Thank you very much for coming, and welcome. We always hope, and our hope is not lacking today, because the world hasn't changed. But taking into account that there are always two fronts in the world, the good front, the front of righteousness, truth, of good deeds, and there is also the bad front of Epstein, the front of the child molesters. This is not a new issue. It has been the case throughout history. We always know that in this world of conflicts, there are two fronts, right and wrong. And we should not despair.
Mr. Trump keeps saying that you are negotiating with him, that you are calling him to negotiate, and in fact, that you're very close to having a deal, so says Mr. Witkoff and Mr. Kushner, who apparently are talking to your government. Is that true?
Well, it's very clear that's completely false. It has been denied many times by Iranian officials, by our esteemed foreign minister, by the speaker of our parliament, or the people who today act as spokespersons for the Iranian nation. And Mr. Trump, as the Americans sarcastically wrote, is almost sitting in front of a mirror negotiating with himself. And the Islamic Republic of Iran has always stated the conditions for negotiations, especially considering the bitter experience we have with Trump in the two rounds of negotiations in which he attacked us militarily during both rounds. Naturally, negotiations are a difficult task.
He keeps mentioning Mr. Kushner and Mr. Witkoff, and I have to ask you, could your government, would your government trust Mr. Witkoff or Mr. Kushner? Would you trust them to negotiate with them again, to talk to them again?
Look, the first question is, why are they bringing up the issue of negotiations so much now? The basic initial question is this. Didn't Mr. Trump say that he is going for regime change and that he will no longer tolerate this regime, as he puts it? Didn't Mr. Trump say that he destroyed Iran? Well, if he did, then why is he talking about negotiations today? So, it shows that they failed and need to negotiate. Look, among the officials of the Islamic Republic of Iran, since the war began, either publicly or secretly, has any official said that we want negotiations? But why are they bringing up the issue of negotiations? One reason is that they failed, and the other is that when they say we are negotiating with Iran, they are targeting our national unity. This means that today we have a unity between the authorities and the people, but they are seeking to disrupt this unity. On the other hand, he also wants to control energy prices, so he needs this media space every day, claiming that we are negotiating and discussing to prevent energy prices from rising too high. But you know that the minds of Trump and Netanyahu are conspiratorial, meaning that even as we are speaking, they are planning how to strike Iran, and they have created this great distrust among the Iranian authorities and the people of Iran.
Just before Mr. Trump made this announcement that he was negotiating with Iran and had come up with this incredible deal and that this thing was close to being over, or however it is that he characterized it, but that's pretty much the gist of what he said. But just before he said that, somebody 12 minutes before went into the market and essentially bet on the price of oil going down because of Mr. Trump's statement. Whoever that was made almost $600 million with that bet. What do you think of that? What does that tell you, that action, that story that is still developing?
Well, that's probably how it is. The bottom line is that both Trump and Netanyahu have conspiratorial minds, and their actions are completely self-serving. Look at what they're saying about Venezuela, that they went to Venezuela, stole its president, and are after its oil. If you remember, in the past, those who wanted to colonize and steal oil would hide it a little and make it look good. They would say, we were going for human rights issues, but at the same time, they were colonizing and stealing oil. But now Trump openly says he wanted Venezuelan oil. In the case of Iran, they've also revealed themselves. They said they wanted Iranian oil and energy, openly admitting their economic objectives in this war. These economic goals, in my opinion, fall into two categories. There are some economic goals that are purely related to their family and their own friends. Mr. Kushner is obviously doing business in the region and is looking to make a profit. Part of it is the slogans that they are raising, claiming to be looking out for the interests of the United States of America. So I think that economic discussions and entering the economy and making a profit are among the goals that they are pursuing.
It seems that Mr. Trump is very concerned about the Persian Gulf. And a lot of people would say, in fact, the former head of MI6 said just yesterday, Iran is winning this war. At least five different military analysts that I have spoke to have told me on the air, Iran is winning this war. And most of them say it's because Iran has a tactical advantage with its missiles. I spoke to the head of ballistic missiles, renowned expert from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He told me, to my surprise, that the United States ballistic defense system is only taking down or intercepting 5% of the missiles that that it tries to intercept. Meanwhile, the other very important thing, as you know, Mr. Ambassador, is that Iran now controls the Persian Gulf. As I always say, what a surprise. Maybe somebody should have thought this could happen. The Persians control the Persian Gulf. That is creating a huge problem for the world. And the world is looking at Mr. Trump and saying, well, you started this. Do you think Mr. Trump is in a place now where he's the one who needs to negotiate more than your country needs to negotiate? beyond him starting the war, do you think he himself is starting to feel like, I got to get out of this thing? I've got to find a way to sit down with Iran and find a way out. In other words, do you feel like your country right now has the leverage in this negotiation?
So they're saying, we started the war. Look, we didn't start the war. And it's clear that America and Israel started the war. And we, I mean our leader and our nation, were living our normal lives on one Saturday when America and Israel attacked us. And this is the first point. The second point is that we had already announced that this war could become a regional war and involve many people. And we had already understood this. And we will explain the philosophy. The third part is about the Persian Gulf, which belongs to us and our neighboring countries. And of course, any security arrangements in this region must be local, and that extra-regional power should not enter it. We have considered this issue wrong in the past, and now we are pursuing the same argument that we should be able to control the Persian Gulf ourselves. Regarding the Strait of Hormuz, well, we had not taken any action so far, and we were cooperating. Countries could easily use the Strait of Hormuz, but we think that from now on, it will definitely have a legal regime. And we, as the owner of this strait, like other canals and straits that exist in the world and are administered by a country that owns the territory of that strait, will definitely have an appropriate legal regime. But then you mentioned a point, which is a correct one. The one who really needs negotiations and dialogue right now is the Americans. And they don't hide it. Every day you see Trump, their foreign minister, and other officials raising the issue of talks and negotiations. Our esteemed foreign minister, Dr. Araghchi, mentioned that they are constantly trying to contact countries that are friends with us and have relations with us and raise the issue of negotiations. But it is natural that today the negotiations will not be like in the past, and the work is very difficult and arduous. And today, we have conditions that must be accepted. Today, the situation is different from the past. Today, they martyred our leader. Today, they killed a large number of our people. Today, they killed our children in Manab and other places. Today, they caused us great material and spiritual damage. Today, our people have been in the streets for 27 nights. And the people must be convinced and accept any kind of negotiation and talks. And the Americans have definitely made the situation very difficult.
So no negotiations. You are not negotiating and you are not going to negotiate as of you know right now.
As of this moment that we are speaking, no, we don't need any negotiations. But, of course, you should take into account that Iran is a rational player. Iran is not looking for war. Iran never denied peace talks. But there should be proper conditions for us to negotiate. Even now, if the conditions for substantive negotiations are established, we can enter talks. Our esteemed foreign minister has repeatedly announced that among our conditions are that we should reach sustainable peace in the region. A ceasefire is not sufficient for us. A ceasefire means that the enemies will regroup, and then they will attack once more, like what happened in June. And then, after several months, you recall they started the war again. And you may remember that Benjamin Netanyahu had a phone call with Mr. Putin a couple months ago. And he said to Mr. Putin that Israel does not intend to attack. And Mr. Putin conveyed this message to Iran. So Netanyahu didn't keep his word. Even after giving their word to Mr. Putin, they still attacked us. On the other hand, Trump has invited us to negotiate, but they have attacked us two times during negotiations. So, a sustainable peace to start negotiations is our first condition. The second is that the aggressor should be known and should be punished. The third is that they should pay compensation and reparations for the damage caused by the war. Some of the things that they did, such as the killing of the Supreme Leader, cannot be compensated. But the material damage, they should pay reparations for. The next point is that the sanctions should be lifted. They must recognize our right to peaceful nuclear energy. These are the conditions that Iran has today. So anytime they meet these conditions, we can start negotiations, because Iran is not looking for war. But at this very moment, as we are talking to each other, we cannot see that these conditions are being met.
And I imagine you would also ask them to remove the sanctions, and they would ask you to diminish your ballistic missile capacity and to guarantee them that you will not enrich uranium to use it for a nuclear weapon.
Our positions are completely clear and unambiguous. It is clear that we are not looking for an atomic bomb. We have already said that we are willing to provide the necessary guarantees. The reason for this is that there is no room for an atomic bomb in our defense and security doctrine. But regarding enrichment, we insist that we must have enrichment because we need fuel, because we have a power plant. A few years ago, we wanted fuel for the Tehran power plant, which is 5 megawatts, and its products are for medical and therapeutic use. We wrote a letter to the International Atomic Energy Agency and requested fuel, but no country was willing to provide it.
So you were not developing or enriching uranium for the purposes of defense? Absolutely not. You were not doing that, and you were not planning to do that, correct?
Absolutely. As our Supreme Leader said when he was among us, we do not want to build an atomic bomb. And if we wanted to, we would.
He had a fatwa. The Supreme Leader had a fatwa, right, saying that you're not allowed to do that. We, for religious reasons. So why then do we keep hearing senators in the United States and Bibi Netanyahu and so many people saying, oh, no, they're this close, tomorrow, the next day, last week, a month ago, a year ago, they're going to bomb you, they're going to kill you. Just yesterday, the former prime minister of Israel told the Europeans on television, we have to destroy Iran because they wanted to destroy you. That's what he said to the Europeans. What do you think when you hear statements like that, given that you're saying it's not true?
They are making these comments because they are looking for an excuse to weaken and then attack Iran. They have been saying for about 26 or 7 years now that Iran is going to build a bomb in a few days. How many times have you heard this statement? So why hasn't Iran built a bomb in this time? The second point is that Mr. Trump attacked nuclear facilities in the June 2025 war and said that he destroyed Iran's nuclear facilities. Well, if you destroyed them, then why did you attack again?
It's a fair question. It's a fair point. And by the way, this thing promises to proliferate even more, because as you and I are sitting here speaking, there are 3,500 special forces of the United States gathering in or around Iran, apparently preparing for some operation to either create a forward operating base on one of the islands in the Persian Gulf, or to take somehow Iran's oil by force. If they do that, and they may have done that by the time you and I are in this conversation, what will Iran's response be?
Incidentally, other journalists also asked me this question. Our answer is that we are ready for the arrival of American soldiers. Right now, the Americans are attacking us from the air and then fleeing, and we do not have access to them. We know how to access the Americans. If they come, it will be good and appropriate, because then our war will become land-based and manly. In a land war, the Iranians are zealous. Iran will not allow its territory to be in the hands of anyone else, and the Americans will definitely cause many deaths.
Wait. You're saying you welcome? I'm hearing you say that you would almost welcome a U.S. invasion of Iran. Is that what you're saying?
Our answer is that if you want to enter Iran, it is no problem, but we will definitely fight you like men. We are not telling them to come. We are not looking to kill. But if someone invades our land and thinks that they can easily take Iran, they are mistaken. Iran is not a conquerable land, and American soldiers will definitely suffer a great calamity, and I do not know if they will be able to remove the bodies of American soldiers from the region. This decision is up to the Americans. Iran does not joke with anyone when it comes to land.
You've already been hitting American soldiers. You've been hitting American installations, but you've been doing it in the other countries that are aligned, that are your neighbors on the Persian Gulf, as you know, those who are in the PGCC, countries like Oman and Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. In fact, they're angry that you're hitting those installations because they say you're attacking their territory. What would you say to them? Because it seems like this thing could escalate where they would be very much involved if the United States escalates the war further by sending in those 3,500 troops to actually attack Iran. What do you say to your neighbors?
We have already given an answer to this. We will attack any point or country that attacks us. Yesterday, Dr. Araghchi announced that wherever there is an American base and American soldiers are present, it will be a legitimate target of the Islamic Republic, and we will attack there. You said it well. We are not looking for war with our neighbors. We consider our neighboring countries to be our great asset. We have also told them that the Americans and the extra-regional powers will leave the region, and it's us who will live side by side for centuries.
That's interesting, because what you just said is newsworthy. We know that the Iran is going to say to the United States, you want this war to end? First of all, you have to remove the sanctions, which are punishing our people. Number two, no, we're not going to agree to get rid of our ballistic missiles, because that's our defense system. And number three, you need to get rid of the military bases that you have right across the Persian Gulf from us. And you have to leave the region, essentially. The United States is not allowed to have a presence in those things. If you give us those things, then maybe we'll negotiate with you. Is that fair? Did I create that story correctly? I may have missed some things, but are those three things the key factors in the conditions that you will set for the United States?
Yes, that's correct. There are other issues. One that I mentioned. First, that a lasting peace be established. This is the first and most important issue for us. And along with that is the issue of punishing the aggressor. This is also important. Along with that, they should give us compensation. Then, yes, there is the issue of lifting sanctions and recognizing our fundamental rights in the areas of enrichment and nuclear energy and other matters that we have. Yes, American bases and the American presence in the region are detrimental to the countries in the region. We saw that the Americans and American bases did not create security for the region. Rather, they created more insecurity. We ourselves, the countries of the region, must come and create a collective indigenous security arrangement with each other.
Do you think those countries that are housing the American forces in their territories, would you say to them, please ask them to leave? It's important that you get them out of there if you want to continue to be our friendly neighbor. Would Iran go as far as to state that to those countries?
This is in their own interest. Are the American bases currently inside the region for the security of the countries in the region, or are they bases to maintain the security of Israel? This question must be answered first. If it was for the security of the region, then why was the war started? So the security of Israel is a fundamental issue for them, because Israel's goal is a greater Israel inside the region. This greater Israel must either be achieved with land, from the Nile to the Euphrates, or Israel must gain sovereignty over all the countries in the region. And the Americans came to guarantee the security of the Israelis, not the security of the countries in the region.
Are you satisfied with the support that you have received from fellow Arab countries? Are you satisfied with the support that you have received from Shias in other countries who are speaking out and some even forcefully fighting on your behalf? And do you encourage some of the things that we have seen in places like Lebanon and Iraq on behalf of the attacks against your country?
Look, first of all, our discussion is not just about Shia. We have relations with all the people of the countries in the region, and we would like our relations to be good. Look how much the people of the region are supporting us now regarding Iranian issues. Go inside different countries. See what ceremonies they have held for the martyrdom of Ayatollah Khamenei, because they loved him. But we believe in a movement within the region, and that movement is the resistance movement. Westerners have not recognized the resistance movement. They think it is a movement that takes orders from Iran. This is a misconception. The resistance movement is an independent movement. Why did the resistance itself arise? It is as a result of oppression of countries. Why did the resistance arise in Lebanon? Because Israel had occupied Lebanon, and the youth of Lebanon gathered and expelled Israel from Lebanon. And this resistance movement remained.
So Hezbollah is not your puppet. Is that what you're saying? as it is claimed.
No, not at all. Hezbollah itself is an independent entity and was formed to liberate Lebanon. We are related, but it is not that Hezbollah takes orders from us or is an agent of Iran. Hezbollah was formed to liberate the occupied territories of Lebanon. Hezbollah exists there because it feels that Lebanon is always under threat from the Zionist regime and Israel.
I'm always hearing, and you have to address this for us, and I think it's important that you address this for us, because if you live in America or if you live in certain places in Europe and you only get your news from CNN or the BBC, you actually believe that not long ago, Iran slaughtered 30,000 people for no reason, only because they were upset with their government. Is that true?
Well, you yourself are a media personality, and you know that in the West, the media is mainly there to whitewash people and justify people, and also to demonize people and create an image of the devil for them. Well, they have been doing this for decades in the West about Iran and trying to present a bad image of Iran. In Iran, you know what they did this time? They did a beautiful job. They wrote down the names, surnames, and national ID numbers of all those who were killed in the incidents, and then we announced it. If anyone thinks that there is one more person than the number we said, please give their name, surname, and national ID number. No one was able to add even one person to the statistics we gave. Our statistics are a little over 3,000 people. And by the way, a large part of the people are our security and law enforcement forces at Basij. A much smaller number of rioters were killed. In Western countries, for example, in Germany or England, can someone stand up to the police and confront them? They can't even shoot at the police. In Iran, some people took up arms. They came out and shot at the police. So what should the police do against these people who are armed?
Yeah, and the story is that they were instigated. In fact, Mr. Pompeo, I believe, tweeted this, and he's the former CIA director, that the Mossad had somehow infiltrated the protesters and they were instigating them to help take down the government. This is not me saying this. This is not you saying this. This is a former director of the CIA, which has made a lot of people wonder if perhaps this was something which was controlled from the outside, which is, I think, the point that you've been making, correct? Yeah. Let me ask you a question about two people, and I want you to address them. I guess, first, what would you say if he were here next to us right now? What would you say to my president as an American? What would you say to Mr. Trump if you could address him right now?
There is nothing to say to Trump. The reason is that he is a person whose speech and language have no value, because even basic human qualities are not present in this person. You are talking to someone who, when you talk, wants to reach a result after talking. He has his own goals in mind and talks to people because he considers them tools, and his view is a top-down view, and he sees others as inferior and himself as superior. You look at Trump's statements and words. There's a deep kind of narcissism in him. He is constantly interested in being praised, and basically no one should criticize him. You even look at his relatives. They criticize a little, they immediately shut up. Therefore, a person should take his time to talk to someone who will have a result for him.
You know, it's funny because Mr. Trump is always trying to talk to the Persian people and tell them what to do. So I'm going to give you an opportunity now to do something. Talk to the American people. What would you say to people like me who live in the United States of America or are American citizens? What should we know that we don't know right now?
I have 2 points to make. First, Trump has a very wrong perception of Iran and Iranians. Therefore, he is caught in this quagmire. These people who are on the streets these nights are Iranians. Those who are defending Iran's borders are Iranians. But he says that this is artificial intelligence. So he wants to talk to a minority of Iranians who are aligned with him. This is wrong. But the second point is, we have no enmity with the American people. Our officials have said this many times. We consider the American people to be the same as the people of other countries in the world. They are living their own lives. We never wish ill on the American people. We oppose the policies of the United States of America that are implemented by their government officials. But we know that these policies are made in the power lobbies in America and have nothing to do with the American people. The American people do not know many of them. The American people are also victims of these power lobbies and wrong decisions. Why should the American people's taxes be spent on a fruitless war? Why should gasoline become more expensive in America? The American people should be alert. Some power-hungry people have taken the American people hostage to their power and are adding unnecessary costs to the American people. Why should an American soldier be killed to defend Israel?
Right now, that question that you just asked is being asked by many Americans more than ever in my lifetime, and I've been around for quite a while. I see a huge, large percentage of Americans. In fact, I think it's safe to say a majority of Americans now believe that the only reason our government is taking us to war with Iran is because of Israel. This is what Americans believe. Many Americans, not all Americans, but many, many, many. Let me say this, more Americans believe that now than at any time in America's history. That's what they believe. And a lot of people are, thought leaders are saying the same exact thing. So my question to you is twofold. A, are they right? And B, why does Israel want to destroy you? A, are Americans correct in assuming that it is indeed a plan, the only reason we're attacking your country is because Israel wants us to attack your country? And the second question is, why does Israel want to destroy you?
This perception by the Americans that Israel pushed America towards war is, in my opinion, a correct perception. The Americans will not gain anything from this war. I tell you that America will definitely lose. It is already lost because Iran, which they thought had become weak, has been standing against the strongest army in the world and the so-called strongest army in the region, namely Israel, for 27 days now.
So you don't blame, you don't think Bibi Netanyahu called Trump and said, I need you to go attack Iran, as a lot of people say? You don't believe that?
Yes, Netanyahu definitely got Trump into this very unfortunate affair. Now, what documents Netanyahu has on Mr. Trump from that island that are dragging Trump along with him is debatable. You asked what is Israel's argument with Iran?
That's it. That's what I wanted to know. Well, let's move on to something else, because I think we've got the answer to that. Let me ask you this. This is important. I spoke to thought leaders who predict the future. I had one on my show yesterday. He said this that we're seeing, this war between Israel, the United States, and Iran, will change the world forever. And it is the beginning of the end of a unipolar world where only the United States and some European countries control the world. As a result of this war, Iran will be more apt to join forces now with China and Russia and some other countries to really create a balance geopolitically in the world. Do you believe that to be true?
We have long believed that the unipolar world is a big prison and a cruel world. The world must move in a direction where all countries play a role. We have been at the forefront of the fight against unilateralism for 47 years. Other countries have also come to this conclusion. The Chinese and Russians have also come to the conclusion that unilateralism is harmful. Of course, some other countries have also come to this conclusion, but some have the courage to declare it, while others do not. We think that the future of the world is a future where the Americans can no longer say that they want to play the first role and other countries must stand together. These mechanisms, such as the SCO, BRICS, and Eurasia that have been created, are to declare that countries of the South also want to play a role. I think this issue is developing more and more day by day.
Final question. You are now in the midst of being attacked by arguably the greatest, most powerful army in the history of the world. When we started this conversation, I said, last time you talked, you were hopeful, and you told me that you're still hopeful. But here's the key question It's one thing to be hopeful, it's another thing to really believe. Do you believe in the end that you will be victorious, that Iran will defeat the United States military, if it needs to, along with Israel? Do you believe that?
I completely believe in this. Why? Because I believe in the Iranian people. Look at the streets and squares of Iran. They have been in the streets for 27 days, putting aside their differences and rallying under the Iranian flag. Iranians do not think of anything less than victory. When we were negotiating, they thought that Iran had become weak. Our martyred leaders said that Iran had not become weak. They awakened the revived Iranian violence and wrath. They cannot easily control and contain this Iranian anger. Therefore, because I believe in my people, my heart is calm, and I fully believe that we will emerge victorious from this war, and Iran will be rebuilt after this war, and will be much stronger than before this war. Many of our friends did not believe that we could resist for more than a week, and today everyone is surprised. This resistance shows that we are victorious, and that the sooner Mr. Trump, Netanyahu, and Israel can save themselves, the better for themselves. They think that if they erode us in the war, Iran will collapse. Well, actually, Iran will become stronger in the war.
Yeah, or some people say it will destroy itself. Sometimes when you try and destroy others, you end up hurting yourself more, and that's the concern that a lot of people have. Mr. Ambassador, you have been so generous with your time. I thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you.
We truly believe that it's our mission. We have 10, 20, 30 million people around the world who are going to watch this interview, all over the world. And we think it's our mission to try and bring them both sides of the story. When you reached out and said you wanted to have a conversation with us, especially in light of what you believe is false information, we wanted to come and talk to you as well. That's our mission. It's our vision for what we think we're supposed to do as journalists. So on your behalf and on behalf of all of us who came out here today, I'd like to thank all of you who are watching us all over the world for giving us the opportunity to be able to bring you this story. And we invite you to go on my social platforms. Tell me what I got wrong. Tell me what the ambassador got wrong. Tell us what you think we can do to perhaps improve what we're saying and how we're perhaps understanding this terrible conflict that we're all in right now. So on behalf of all of us, please, I invite you to go to any one of the social platforms, whether it's on Twitter or on Spotify or on X. I know there's tens of thousands of you there already. Continue telling us what you think about what's happening right now and my conversation with the ambassador. And perhaps most importantly, I'd like to thank all of you for allowing us into your homes. And we'll be looking for you next time. I'm Rick Sanchez.